Welcome to Conversations from the Heart, the podcast of Moyo Talks and the Heart Center. Good morning and welcome to Conversations from the Heart. My name is Mark Bind. I'm an intuitive energy healer and a teacher and trainer of energy healers, and one of your hosts this morning on our podcast, the official podcast of the Moyo platform, Moyo Talks and the Heart Center. With me today, we have four other co-hosts guiding us through this conversation and meditation. And if you guys can please introduce yourselves.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alex. I'm a life and business accountability coach. Specializing in the areas happiness and freedom and wellness. And I'm really happy to be spending the morning with everybody.
Good morning. I'm Cindy Holmes. I am the director of the School of Intuition and Healing, where we teach intuition and healing, as well as I'm a partner on the Moyo platform. I'm a business coach and life coach. I'm a psychic, a medium, and many other things. I'm so looking forward to our conversation this morning.
Hi, my name is Jen, and I am a sociologist. I teach sociology to university students and psychologists, and also modes of healing. I work with people with life transition, and I'm really pleased to be here with everyone this morning.
Morning, everybody. My name's Valerie. I'm very delighted once again to be here this morning as we share information from our heart space. I work as an energy healer. I'm a tutor with the School of Intuition and Healing. I'm passionate about meditation, and I assist people in a process of finding their own path and their own journey. So I'm very happy that we're able to share the conversations with you this morning.
Great. Thanks, all. And now for our Monday morning meditation. Val, if you can please guide us through the meditation this morning.
Sure. So I'm just going to start the meditation, and I'm just going to open it up with the ringing of my little bell. And as I ring the bell, find your feet on the ground and notice if you can relax your shoulders. And as we take our comfortable seat with our feet on the ground, relaxing our bodies, bringing awareness to the breath, allowing the breath to move in and out of the body. No force, just allowing the breath to breathe your body. Get a sense of a mountain that holds and supports in a grounded, nurturing way, and allow yourself to experience that holding and support. Bring that energy from the mountain up through your feet, your lower limbs, the upper limbs, bringing it further up into the lower part of your body and allowing it to arrive in your heart space. For a moment, allow yourself to get a sense of that holding, supportive, nurturing energy arriving in your heart space. Then with intention, take your awareness up, up above, through the roof of the place where you are sitting right now, and allow it to reach up, up, your energy moving up and your awareness to connect with the highest source of light and love. And as you allow yourself to get a sense of that connection, bring that beautiful energy down, down, down through the top of your head and your upper body, and it arrives in your heart space and connects with that nurturing energy of the mountain and Mother Earth. And as you receive this beautiful healing energy of love and light, allow yourself to breathe from the heart space as you breathe in love and breathe out peace. And in your own time, do this 2 or 3 more times, just following your breath, breathing in love and breathing out peace. Breathing in love and breathing out peace. And from the centered heart space and this grounded and connected space of energy that we've created within us and around us, we ask for protection of the space that we are in, as we open our hearts for this conversation. And as we rest with that intention, I will share a line of a poem which goes, "What you can plan is too small for you to live. What you can live wholeheartedly will make enough plans. What you can plan is too small for you to live. What you can live wholeheartedly will make enough plans." And as we live from a heartful space, we once again ground our feet and get a sense of this holding mountain. And when you are ready, bring yourself back into your space. And we allow the conversation to flow from our hearts.
Ah, oh, thank you, Val. It was beautiful. Who is the poet?
Poet is David White, W-H-Y-T-E.
I love that line. It's really something that's sort of, that I'm experiencing at this moment, is trying to live fully from the heart, to really live my fullest life. And I agree, there's no ways that one can actually conceive of what is possible when you think of it cognitively. You kind of just need to allow it to unfold. And the more you stay in the heart, the more it seems to unfold in that way. So I'm wondering who received an interesting question or a moment of insight during that meditation.
So Mark,
everybody still seems to be like reverberating with that energy.
What came to me in that beautiful meditation, and what has been coming to me a lot over the last week, is that we have so much knowledge within, and sometimes we keep trying to gain more and more knowledge instead of just practicing the basics of what we know, and really using those at this time to shine our light, which will in turn shine the light of the collective consciousness. And so we as I say, you know, for me, we continually planning, I'm going to do this workshop, or I'm going to listen to this person, and I'm going to do this and this. And for me, really getting back to 101 basics, my energy management, getting back to the basic chakras, just the basic chakras and what they can reveal to us. I was feeling really fluey on Friday. And I think when one starts to feel really fluey, one goes, oh my goodness, have I got corona? And then going back to what are the basics? What are the basics I need to do? I need to ground my energy. I need to clear my subtle bodies. I need to look into my basic chakras, the 7 basic chakras, and just see what's going on, because these are such a good barometer to what is going on for us, rather than really getting my brain all complicated with different things. Just for me, that flow and that knowledge is within, and tapping into that beautiful knowledge that we already have. And I'm wondering how everyone else is operating at the moment, because that basic knowledge is getting me to a very high vibration. And I'm feeling so much better today, having done the work within the body, clearing out the energy body, spending time in each of the chakras. I feel like the cold has almost released itself today. So I'm feeling really good about that.
Yeah, there's definitely almost like an 80-20 rule. You can spend 80% of your time just on the basics and it wouldn't be wasted. Like energetically, healing and aligning your chakras, cleansing your aura. If you spent 80% of your energy time, energy management time on that, and grounding, obviously, that time wouldn't be wasted. And then you can spend 20% of the time doing some of the other fancier stuff or more complicated stuff. But I think it's like that with anything, you know, with A Course in Miracles, there's a lot of talk around forgiveness. And it is in the practice of forgiveness that the lessons are actually learned, not in the reading about it, not in doing the workshops, not in listening to another podcast, but actually going and doing that forgiveness on a minute by minute or hour by hour basis to the people who push your buttons.
I'm finding that during this time and reflecting on the meditation that I was guided to bring today, that just affirming what Cindy has said about bringing ourselves back to the basics of the way we are in the world. And I think as we move into the basics of our energy management and taking care of our own selves, that impacts how we then take care of others. And the more we take care of ourselves and move within just through our basic self-care of our energy and our chakras and our auric fields, we then reflect back to others in a gentle way of how to take care of themselves. And I'm reminded that the basics, I'm often reminded about myself that I feel I need to learn this, or I need to be there, or I need to be here. And that just takes us out of the present moment. And the basic takes us back to the present moment, to now. And as we connect with ourselves in the present moment, we then find out where we at, and that impacts in other lives. And I really appreciate what you said, Cindy, because that's really where I've been feeling, even with my clients that have been coming for a long time, is bringing them back to their grounding, what's happening in their chakras, what's happening in their energy field, and not moving into a space where it's so in the mind, making sure that we embody. And I listened to something about all this time we've been cultivating our practices and gaining information. And now is a real time to live your practice, to live, to embody, to be within. And that is when it's integrated and creates such a stable, grounded foundation for us to move forward in our own lives and then impact other lives with that.
Yeah, I was at, when you say embody, I was actually talking to a group. I have a group on a Sunday evening, and we were talking last night about embodiment and how, you know, things, and Cindy, you said you were feeling fluey. And also, I think really reminded in this conversation how what's happening around us, or what might be going on in our, you know, our thinking field, etc., kind of lands in our body. And, you know, we feel these things somatically. And I think, getting into that practice of tuning into our body and letting our body, you know, in all ways, you know, are we feeling fluey? Have I got a headache? What's happening? That will generally be not necessarily environmental, but a reflection of my emotions, or, you know. And I think the practice of actually tuning into that more regularly and really, you know, sitting with, you know, is there a block? Is there something that I'm struggling with? Am I emotionally, you know, am I experiencing myself with difficulty today? I think all of these things really do show up in our body, and we're so busy and distracted and kind of being rational the whole time about these things that we just have really lost that art of, you know, letting our bodies guide us, you know, letting our bodies speak for us, and letting the mind come later and make sense of it maybe, but our bodies having absolute wisdom Those things showing in different ways.
Yeah, I do think the body definitely speaks to you. It's the barometer. It's telling you what's going on at all times. And I like to do a lot of interactive healing with my clients. And with interactive healing, all I do is I take them into meditation and ask them to feel their body. And then we dive into what they feel. And it's amazing the insights and the wisdom that can come from going into that feeling in the body, where that blockage is. And you can, just through a guided meditation, the client can get in touch with what the emotion was, or what the emotion is in the in the ache or the pain or the blockage, and they can go back and they can identify exactly where it started. So I normally sort of take them through like an NLP process where I get them to sort of feel and sense the shape and the texture and the color of that blockage. And then I just ask, okay, well, when was that blockage created? And almost instantly they'll get, okay, I was 13 years old and my father did this or my mother did this or whatever it was. And then it just with that, it will start dissolving. But then when you breathe some light through the blockage, and the blockage starts to dissolve, and you know, by the end of the session, it's gone and the pain's gone. You know, from people who've almost been in hospital needing operations, you can find that emotional knot and release it. It's quite amazing. Except where people are disembodied. Now, Val, I don't know if you guys have had this. If somebody is out of their body to a certain degree or more, they can't feel the stuff in their body. And you take them through this process and it's like, okay, what do you feel in your body? And they're like, I don't feel anything. It's because the trauma in childhood was so severe that they're effectively, what happens is the etheric body, the innermost layer of the aura and everything on top of it, is out of alignment with the physical body. So with the energy out of alignment with the physical body, they can't feel it in the body. And I suppose there's quite a bit of this because, you know, people have had a lot of trauma in their lives, and sometimes you need to work with it a little bit more to get them to feel that in a certain way.
And that brings us back to doing the basics of the grounding and bringing yourself back into your body to feel the embodiment. And that's where one needs to start in terms of let's just look at the one-on-one, the basic instinct right now. Because at this time, what I am finding is that people are, because of the fear mongering that goes on within the media and this continual chatter of bad news and governments and, you know, and people being quite indecisive around what is certain and what is not certain. And that energy in our world today is taking people out of their bodies. And that is really important, that one is bringing oneself into the body so that one can actually feel the embodiment. So the grounding and being in the body and being present and feeling. And I know Val is always, feel your own body. Are you in it? Feel your limbs. Are you feeling like you're in your limbs? And that then going into that deeper work that Mark was talking about is really essential at the moment, more than anything else.
Cindy, I was chatting to one of my clients about is trying to get into meditation practice. And whenever the word get a sense of your feet on the ground, kept saying to me, and I have an understanding of his history and his difficulty and the trauma. And he said, that's ridiculous. I can't feel my feet on the ground. And that's how out of the body he is. That even the concept of just getting a sense of the feet on the ground, being out of the body, is so big for him. And so my advice to him, and maybe that's something I share, is, well, just take a walk outside in nature and barefoot, because we've always got shoes on, and especially him, and that's a difficult sensation. But I said, just touch the ground with your feet, start to feel your feet on the ground, and then start to connect with the energy of the ground and the energy of your body connecting to it. So it's a gentle process with some who feel that they're so out of their body because the trauma is so numbing. But that just explains how important the grounding is, grounding ourselves back, and that holding power of being grounded and connected allows us to connect with our bodies. And that's what's so beautiful about being grounded. Although when it's difficult, then that's a different process, as Mark's talking about.
Yeah, I found before I started my healing journey, I was quite ungrounded and out of body. I didn't want to be on this planet. The planet was too harsh and uncomfortable and heavy, and I just wanted to meditate and be up with in the clouds with the fairies. But what I found is, you know, you talk about walking barefoot on the ground, and what I would do is I would walk on the ground intentionally, and with each foot I would just see the energy connecting to each foot. I'd almost see it as like a glowing red light with each footprint, you know, around on the grass. Or if I went walking in the forest, I'd do the same thing. I'd just intentionally, just with each step, see the red light glowing from my feet into the earth. And the most amazing thing with doing that grounding practice was the world started to respond to my intentions. So my manifestations became, they actually started to work, you know. So if I put an intention out into the universe, it came back. And it wasn't doing that before I started grounding. It was almost like the connection to the earth connected me to all the inhabitants of the earth, to humanity and the energy of life itself. And my intention started to respond so much better when I was grounded.
I think that really speaks to me about source. And, you know, I think a process that we've been developing for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, with kind of in inverted commas civilization, is going away from center, away from being grounded and out into it's out there. Or, and I mean, you know, with deepest respect to a lot of religious practice, but I think for me, say monotheism actually takes us out. So we're looking, you know, to someone else or sort of out here beyond that we don't really ground and center and be right here. And I think that for me too is something that I see very different with Indigenous cultures, that there is that center and that there is the earth, the ground, there's a custodianship, not a sort of taking over. So I talking about the grounding, and I think for me really important is also having a center, like a source. So what you just said, Mark, really spoke to me of that sort of source, and that it's not out, it's not beyond us. It is absolutely, you know, for all of us, you know, within, and that that does connect us to being able to, you know, to have an availability to, you know, to manifest, for things to actually come to us when we're actually part of that organism rather than, you know, sitting beyond it or trying to access it, sort of looking out here maybe. And for me, that's really my practice usually is it's a real center. It's a core where everything sort of comes there and, you know, and I get to question, what are you feeling? You know, what's this doing out here? Or what's your mind doing? That might be impacting you physically, you know, come back, be still, come back to the center and, you know, breathe. And, you know, that's for me too, is also a place of, you know, not reacting immediately to those, environmental triggers or whatever they are. And then I think I am much more, able to tap into that source, you know, be grounded, have my feet steady and, you know, be really centered. And then it's very clear. And that's really in my body. That's my
this idea of embodiment is so important, because a lot of life, and again with due respect to all religious practices, because I think they've got a place on the path, but embodiment is really about embodying the divinity within yourself. It is bringing that source energy through your body and out into the world. One of the problems I see, and certainly something that I experience and I see a lot of people experience, is the idea that somebody or something else is going to save us. God is going to save me. Jesus is going to save me. The aliens are going to save me. The Democrats or the Republicans or whatever it is, somebody's going to come and save us. But I'll tell you an interesting story, something a client of mine experienced. And she was having a hard time one night. She was having some like panic attacks at night, dealing with some negative energy. And she started calling on God, God, come and help me, whatever, whatever. And then God didn't arrive. And, you know, she's retelling the story to me. She's a little bit upset about that. But then what she did is she used her own strength to clear the negative energy and bring calm to herself and go to sleep. And she felt much better. And I explained to her that what actually happened was when she called on God, she wasn't calling on a man sitting on a cloud. She wasn't going to get a big booming voice, thunder and lightning outside. What actually happened was the divinity within herself awoke as she called on the divinity and gave her the strength to actually deal with the problem that she was facing. And then the penny suddenly dropped, but it also kind of dropped for me at the same time, was this is actually what we're calling on when we call on the divine. We're calling on that divinity within ourselves to awaken. And we think God doesn't answer our prayers because it's not outside of us. It's actually embodied through us.
You know, and I think, Mark, having grown up with these, you know, around the Christ energy, you know, religions, and from a young child and our parents' understanding of that, It was, you know, there was a lot of judgment. There was a lot of having to do certain rituals to make God outside of us. So I think in our mental bodies, there's a lot of preconceived and limited belief. And when one says to somebody who is in practice in a Christ, in certain Christ energy or Christ consciousness religions or doctrines as such, and you say, I am God, there is this huge resistance around, how can you say you are God and it's God's will and it's this? And so there's been a lot of doctrine around from the time when, as I understand, when the Christ Energy churches took over from the pagans, and I know more around that in the United Kingdom, and so what they did is they came in with fear, and the patriarchal system that came in at that time as well. So it was more around the fear, and that only certain people could connect with God, because it was about property, it was about money, it was about getting people to follow at that time, whereas it had been a lot more open and it had been a lot more. So it's quite interesting, the God within us. We're empowering individuals. We're not looking outside, as you say, to a church leader who can heal me, or you know, or even to the Son of God, the Christ consciousness energy, you know, and really actually understanding that energy is within us, and we can access the Christ energy, and that almost is how it would be born again, by us accessing it, rather than a doctrine of of being under the will of Christ, that it is our will to change. And that is my understanding, and if there are people listening who don't agree with what I say, please just leave it at the door. But my learning over the years around the Christ energy, because I went into resistance around the Christ energy and the Christ consciousness, because it was like, well, why should I do this and why should I do that and why should I be submissive to that and why should I have to do these rituals that don't feel right? But when I understood that the Christ energy was within us, and that we are the Son of God, or we are the son or daughter of the divine, and that came from within, and that is within us, and that is how we claim ourselves back or born again. So somewhere those doctrines got terribly muddled up with people wanting power, with people needing money, with people buying properties all over the world. They needed money. They needed people to do that in order for them to gain power. And that is kind of my understanding. Now, there are historians who listen to this call or whatever. I might have got it in. I'm really just channeling this information, guys. So I don't have the details, but I know that's what happened within me and my understanding. And now I don't have any issue with the Christ consciousness. I'm happy to accept that there are people who follow it, and I have an understanding of it, and I don't go, oh my goodness, what is this? And I'll, one little story of how I had to start doing it is when, as a healer, when I was doing healing, and I was getting quite advanced in my healing, and all of a sudden I would invite my guides and angels in for the healing session. And one day Jesus turned up and I was like, what are you doing here? Like, why are you here in my healing? And I then realized that actually I had to make peace, and I had to find a way of making peace with the Christ consciousness, as opposed to getting upset and angry about it. And that's when I kind of discovered what I've just spoken about.
Yeah, and that sort of thing would have got you executed for blasphemy a few thousand years ago. But that's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, perhaps there was actually an agenda, but, you know, to call yourself divine was blasphemous. But that's how it is, you know. And I think as a species, we're starting to realize, actually, okay, that is true, you know. And the second coming of Christ is the Christ consciousness that's awakening within all of us. But I was very uncomfortable with this idea of being God, of being a part of God. And when I first started reading that in the spiritual books I was reading many years ago, it felt very uncomfortable. I had to sit with it for a long time before I actually made peace with it. You know, and it's in all the good spiritual books as well. You know, Conversations with God, I think, is probably where I first encountered it. And I was like, well, I've got to sit with this a little bit. But now it just makes complete sense right now.
To add to that, I think that inherently, when we do listen to our body, we know that we have complete power within us, and that we are God and God is in us, and we are made of him and him within us and her. But I think also, and I don't want to go into religious institutions and that it's a control mechanism, and that's why a lot of this conditioning is there. But there's also a second part, I think. I think part of the reason why many people struggle with this, about being able to reconcile how we've been conditioned and taught growing up about this outside being that controls everything, and what inherently we feel is not entirely true, is also that as long as there's an outside being, I'm absolved of accountability. And to a part, there's that as well. You know, it takes a lot of security within ourselves to be able to say, you know what, the buck really stops with me. But in the meantime, you know what, it's kind of cool to be able to blame God if things don't work the way I want it to.
And I did that a lot.
Me too.
I think that really, yeah, that really speaks to me, Alex. And I think that could be even where we have that mindset of scarcity as well. You know, that we're kind of waiting, or, you know, we don't really, you know, responsibility is not necessarily with us, or, you know, we don't need to look within too much. And it's that kind of eternal being parented in some respects, you know, that we hold, and also the punishment that goes with that, you know. So rather than trust ourselves and do something that we might tune into and be able to trust, you know, we question, or we're then, you know, we're going to be punished, or we're going to get this wrong, you know. It sort of flips out our navigation system, really, I think. Yeah. And that we, yeah, we're sort of eternally parented and looking for someone else, I guess, to solve something. And that, to me, is the biggest shame of, and Cindy, you said, you know, what happened, and certainly that was a political move. It was Constantinople, actually. And the Bible was canonized in the 3rd century to remove any sort of idea that people could try things over and over again. And that, so then there were things taken out so that those scriptures reflected that we only had one chance. And if we didn't get it right, we wouldn't go to heaven and we'd be punished. And so, you know, sort of things develop in the minds of all of us from there. And then, you know, so we had priests, and then we have kings that are, you know, given divinity and able to, you know, sort of lead us. And I think, you know, this continual being parented and looking out, that now has become government, you know, governments, and you know, things got, there were no kings anymore, and we lost God, and, you know, we ended up looking to leaders, etc. So there's this sort of continual process of us not really knowing how to even trust our own thoughts, feelings. And I think, yeah, questioning and being afraid that we will be punished if we do something wrong, where, you know, everything is within us. It's all there. If we're part of, from my perspective, if we're part of this planet, universe, and we're a species, then we have internal knowledge already. We have the wisdom and everything we need to actually be this species without interruption. But yeah, just unfortunately a lot of interruption.
I think some of those politicians actually do think they're God, and not in the way that we're speaking of.
Absolutely.
What I used to do is I used to just like have this prayer, God, you know, I didn't know what to do with my life. I was like trying to find a career, and it's just nothing was working, because what I was doing is I was saying, God, just tell me what you want me to do. I'll do whatever, you know, you want me to do. Just tell me what to do. And so I ended up drifting, and I drifted and I drifted and I drifted. And I went from one thing to the other, and nothing really worked, and nothing was ever satisfying. Until one day, down at rock bottom, my wife said to me, don't worry about earning any money right now. You know, I've got a job. Just do whatever you want to do today. I'm like, okay. And so I put the idea of trying to find an income out of my mind. And what I started doing is I started healing just myself and my family. And then, you know, it sort of snowballed from there. But I started to do the thing that I wanted to do each day. And this is actually where God provides the roadmap to us, or the divinity. It's inside of us. It's this thing that the spark that gives us life. It's the thing that excites us. It's this energy, or there's a desire to create or to do something. And if you follow that, the thing that brings you the most joy, you'll find yourself doing the thing that you're meant to be doing. And this is kind of like, I realized that what God was waiting for me to do is to do the thing that I wanted to do most with my life. And this is what God wanted me to do. And I'm still talking about God as something outside of there, but it kind of helps to make sense of it, in that way, because it was within me all along.
The Japanese talk about a concept of ikigai, which is your reason for being or your purpose. And they have four different factors that where they converge is your purpose. But it starts off with, what am I passionate about? What am I really good at doing? And what brings me joy? And those are the starting points of the convergence. And then it goes into, well, of that, what can add value to the rest of the world, and where what can actually be monetized. But the starting is what's already inside you. So we get given, I agree with you, exactly as you say, we get given that roadmap already. And the search isn't so much about asking, what am I meant to do here? But looking inside ourselves, because it's all there. And it starts off with, what brings me joy? And then from there, it's like, what am I good at? And they usually converge somewhere, and there's the answer. And it's really as simple as that. But we're good at making it complicated.
Yeah, that was an interesting discussion around what I started. I was very intrigued how Cindy described the beliefs, and then how Jen went along with what's the history and the understanding. And I reflected on my own path, being born Catholic, then becoming a born-again Christian, and then converting to Judaism, and then following the Buddhist teachings. Not that I see it as any form of religion. And what came to me, which I always used to say to people who would bring in a whole religious aspect, that all the paths and all the, there was a part of me that I was embarrassed about all these paths that I had embarked on. But what I loved about what Cindy said about the Christ consciousness, because many people would say to me, once you've converted to Judaism, well, Jesus no longer exists, or you don't, you know, are you not? And what I've, in my later maturer years, have discovered is that all these paths are within me, and parts of all of them that have been given to me, not the dogma, not the mental programming, but they all connect and come together in some way and have allowed me to live from a place of meaning and joy. We're not getting stuck in the mental body about what the dogma is around them. And I love that ikigai, the convergence, and with purpose and the joy, because once we tap into the joy, I often get a sense that when people are really struggling in life, that spark of joy, and that's the connection to God or the inner being or the higher source that they have lost. Because you often observe that there's no joy in life. And just those moments of joy, what you speak about, is so powerful in our own lives and in our connection to all that is.
I think, Val, that, yeah, and this whole conversation actually always takes me into so many areas, but language, I think, is really powerful. And Mark, you said, you know, I'm still saying God, or we might say the Christ consciousness, or Val, you just said, you know, people would say, well, you know, in Judaism there is no Christ, so, you know, there is no Jesus. I think sometimes language also really binds us, and you know, that sort of essence, or that spark, the joy that can be just nothing. It's something, it's there, but this process that we sort of have to categorize everything and put everything into sort of a container that then we can maybe just go over and access it again there, rather than it just being, and it's just being. I think that's something that really gets in our way sometimes, that we have paradigms then, and we think this is, you know, Christianity, or this is this path, this is Judea, this is what this is, and we attach so much meaning to those things. I think that's where we can really limit, you know, we limit this expansion. I've listened to someone that really inspires me to listen to is someone like, say, Sam Harris. I'm not sure if anyone's listens to him, or even Richard Dawkins, or the Four Horsemen I really love. And that, you know, it doesn't need to be anything, and that atheism has somehow now got, you know, a label, or it's tried to be contained into some meaning. But that can just be the simple joy in, you know, realizing that you are part of this whole system. And just the sky and how wonderfully blue it is. It's not a manifest, you know, it's not, you know, or the green grass or something, you know, it's not sort of something that's been, you know, created and, you know, sprung up from this day. It's just there, and it's what it is for that moment. And yeah, I think remembering for me too, that just trying really hard not to contain things and have them you know, rationalized, and trying to keep the mind out of that a bit, just sort of, yeah, anyway, that was a bit off tangent. Sorry.
There's a line in A Course in Miracles that says words are but symbols of symbols, they're twice removed from reality.
So in doing that, and one of the things for me, because there's so much out there around my purpose and my ikigai and finding it. And for me, it's that real feeling. It's not what we're thinking. Our minds are so powerful. You know, our language is so powerful at creating these models. We've been conditioned to all these models sitting in our mental bodies. And for me, one of the closest times I've ever felt God, the Holy Spirit, whatever it is. I used to have a client in Cairo, and I spent 6 weeks in Cairo, in Egypt. And I love being in Egypt. But my best time was on a Friday morning, because nothing happened in Cairo on a Friday morning. Cairo was really, really quiet. And the restaurants, the shops don't open till after prayers. And we used to go and prepare. I was working in a restaurant group, and we used to prepare the restaurant. And after prayers, people would come to the restaurant. My best time in Cairo. Now, Cairo has mosques that are like pubs in London. I mean, on every corner there is a mosque. And on a Friday at 12 o'clock, I would walk in Cairo and hear the calling to prayer from all these different mosques in the city that is the noisiest city, one of the noisiest cities, and just walk through Cairo and hear the calling to prayer. And that vibration, the feeling of that vibration within my heart, is one of the closest to being God that I've ever felt. Nothing to do with anything other than a feeling and this beautiful noise of the imams calling to prayer in my heart. And I can feel it now as I say it. It's just the most beautiful feeling in my heart. And that is God.
And I think those rituals are very useful when they're understood for what the purpose is, you know, that ritual of the call to prayer, praying five times a day, there's a purpose to it. And if you understand the purpose, it makes a lot of sense. You know, in Catholicism, the ritual of doing your forgiveness or your, you know, all these rituals have a purpose. And whilst the purpose may have been shrouded over or clouded or distorted over the centuries, if you can get back to that true purpose, you can use the ritual for what it was intended. And I say that because in A Course in Miracles, it has a very thorough training program where some days it will have you repeat a prayer every half an hour. But there's a purpose to it. It's retraining your mind. It's retraining your thinking to be in that sort of level of consciousness.
And I would even take that a step further and say there's more than just a purpose to it. A lot of the chanting in rituals and the words that are chosen actually have helped change our frequency. So to give a really simple example, the word Amen in Christian religion, and then there's Amen, Shalom, Om, all have the same frequency and serve the same purpose of raising our frequency to a certain level and play with our energy. And that stuff that's not taught to us when we go to church or to whatever religious institution, but it is things that work on a different level within us in order to connect to the greater universe. Yeah,
I think it's really powerful. Like you say, use the tool to raise the frequency. And then when you move beyond that frequency, find a new tool until you don't need a tool at all. And, you know, it's really powerful. What I'm seeing at the moment, my daughter has shifted schools. So she's now in a sort of like a online school, but it's a Waldorf-based school, and they start each morning with some songs, but you know, it's sort of, you know, I'd say Stein was probably a Christian mystic. So a lot of the songs carry that energy, and it shifts the energy, you know. I'm quite happy that one of the songs that they sing a lot is about calling on Archangel Michael to slay his foes, or to slay our foes. And that obviously resonates with me. So, but I notice how singing the song every morning raises her energy. It opens up, it gets her ready for a day of learning. So use the tool and raise your frequency. And of course, singing and these rituals also help us with embodiment, which is where this conversation actually started. If we go back an hour, you know, singing, chanting, this is, you know, it's embodying, because you're using your body to do the process, to pray and connect to source. Right, it is 11 a.m. Our hour is up. It has been a wonderful morning discussing embodiment and everything that came from that with you guys. Thank you for being here. And I look forward to connecting again next week. And I look forward to hearing the comments from our listeners. Send in your questions by email. Send in your comments by email. We look forward to hearing them. Thank you all for being here.